Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 279 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. It's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Or you could just call me Heavy D, because tonight I'm here with the boys. Got Bradford here. Got Jonathan Five, the human robot, here. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
I'm all right. I've had that Heavy D and the boys joke locked and loaded for like 6 months. I finally got to use it tonight.
We're back with more daddies.
Oh, gosh.
At least one dad on the podcast tonight. But also, my fiance Nikki is back. Welcome back, Nikki.
I'm second guessing coming back after the D joke.
Come on. Okay. All right. Well, friends, it's not often that we get listener requests here on the podcast, but when we do, we feel like we need to make good on that promise. So tonight we are discussing the 2017 Will Ferrell comedy Daddy's Home 2. It's the second part in the Daddy's Home saga. I don't think you need to have seen the original to get anything out of this one.
Had you seen Daddy's Home the first?
I had. So I had some vague idea of what was going on. But I will also say, watching this one, I could not tell you whose kids were whose. Because it does not matter.
It mostly doesn't.
It really doesn't. And they really don't try to explain it to you either. But we're getting ahead of ourselves here, folks. We got some light housekeeping to do before we get started. From our last episode, I just want to point out that $28 has been donated to the Second Harvest Food Bank of Northwestern North Carolina.
Yay.
Bradford won the challenge that week with $28. So congratulations to them. We might do it again this week. We'll see how we feel. And then our listener request, I'm going to read it here for you, comes from a listener named Matt, who says, "Hi, I'm a new listener from the UK. Came across your podcast last December, and I binged quite a few of your episodes over Christmas," which that's lovely. I love that people can find our show and just like start listening to them left and right. That's what this is for.
It's your resource.
if nothing else, this podcast is an encyclopedia of awful Christmas movies. But he goes on to say he was wondering if we could do an episode on Daddy's Home 2. It's his new favorite Christmas movie over the last few years, and he'd love to hear our opinion on it. So thank you, Matt, for that lovely letter. And I am sorry for anything we're about to say about Daddy's Home 2. So first impressions, what did everyone think of Daddy's Home Part the Second?
I liked it better than the first one.
So you've seen the first one?
I have seen the first one.
Okay.
I thought this one was better, but I don't know if that's that much of a compliment.
I liked it more than I thought I would.
It surprises me, and it doesn't, because like as the resident dad, this is kind of your home turf.
There were a couple, let's say, dad humor things that I got mm-hmm. a chuckle out of. Let's put it that way.
All right.
In fact, I had a tally going, and I counted. Oh. I counted 9 chuckles and or laughs throughout this film, which is better than I probably about. Twice as much as I would have imagined.
It's pretty good on the Brad chuckle meter.
That's
pretty high.
Yeah, I thought we were like in like grown-ups territory or something with this movie. I was judging a book based on its cover. I don't know what I was expecting going into this, but it wasn't what I expected. I'm not gonna sing its praises at the high mount, but it's all right.
Well, let's throw it to J-Man. What did you think of this? I think you just finished watching this a minute ago.
Yeah, it cleared the very low bar I had set for it being a Will Ferrell movie.
Okay.
I have a problem with Will Ferrell usually in that someone on set needs to tell him to just, like, take it down 10%, and no one ever does.
I kind of agree with that. I was actually thinking of, like, a different Will Ferrell movie I had a problem with just today, and this kind of, you're right, it has the same problem as some of those.
Well, now you need to say the movie. Come on.
It's a movie from last year called Quiz Lady. Have either of y'all seen that?
I was reading about it on Wikipedia 10 minutes ago.
It's a pretty good little movie, but Will Ferrell basically plays like an Alex Trebek type in the movie.
Okay.
And there are just a couple of scenes where it's obvious they just said, "Will, just go for a few minutes and see what happens."
Just...
And obviously, like, no one was going to correct him on anything that he said.
I see.
Because there's a whole monologue that he does about his favorite movie in the world, which is, and I quote, "Mighty Ducks Part 2, Ducks Fly Together," which is not the name of Mighty Ducks 2. And if it's really your favorite movie, you ought to know that it's called D2, The Mighty Ducks. And I wonder if that's just him improvising it because he can't say the real title, or if he actually doesn't know the real title and no one wanted to correct him.
I think you're not giving this man enough credit, and perhaps he's playing a character that does not know the correct title of the second Mighty Ducks movie.
Oh.
I'm probably giving him too much credit. I will give William Ferrell credit for this, however, in that he is now within striking distance of the Triple Threat Club.
This is true.
We could just watch Spirited and he'd be in.
And you know, Spirited also comes...
We have to watch Spirited.
Yeah. We have to watch Spirited to do that, but also it comes from the same director as Daddy's Home too. So there's a bit of a connection there already.
What about Markle Wahlberg? Have we seen anything with him before?
Markle
Wahlberg.
Brad, are you hitting the can already tonight?
We do need to talk about a can check.
We do.
This is my first one. I just wanted to come up with a silly name for Mark Wahlberg. Please forgive okay. me. Markle? I was going to say Wahlburgers, but that felt not as good as Markle Wahlberger.
I mean, Markle Wahlbergers is pretty good. Marky Mark is kind of played, though, so I'm glad you didn't go with that one.
And Angela Markle Wahlberger. So... Have we seen
there any, it is
before we do the can check, have we seen anything else with him in it?
I can't say that we have. I don't think so.
Okay. Can check, can bottle, glass, drinking vessel, drink check. Let's go with that. Let's start with Johnny Five, the human robot. What you working with?
I am flying solo right now. I did not grab anything because I'm stupid as fuck.
These things happen. It's okay.
Joseph?
I went out, knowing that we were going to do this show, I went out and found the daddest of dad beers for tonight. So I am throwing back a nice cold Narragansett tonight, friends.
I do like a good... Hi, neighbor.
Hi, neighbor.
A good... I do like a good Gansett. That was my go-to... That was my go-to lager for quite a while.
You know, it's not bad.
It's solid. It's serviceable. It's a trusty friend.
Yeah, it's a good back pocket kind of beer.
Yeah. Nikki?
I've got a lambic beer from Belgium that is Lindeman's, not the cough drop, strawberry flavored.
Oh, huh. How is
and
it?
I'm gonna Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Hey. It tastes like strawberries and gross stuff, but it's okay.
And gross stuff.
Yeah. So lambic beer's not great, but they were very expensive because they're imported and I don't want to waste them.
I do. they're an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Bradford, what about you, Monfrere?
I have a Trogues Nugget Nectar once a year ale. It's a very special time of year when the Nugget Nectars come back out. Big fan.
What's a,
nu-
What's a nugget nectar?
It's just, it's like their, it's like their IPA.
Shut up. Stop.
What?
It's just weird for a man to ask another man what nugget nectar is.
Got him.
I just had, that just brought a chuckle out of me. I'm sorry.
It's a, it's like a, it's an imperial amber. But it's like resiny. It's got pine notes, mango. It's good stuff.
Nice.
Track down a case at your local grocer or wherever fine beers are sold. Trogues, please send me some free beer or at least a sticker. Come on.
Somebody from Trogues probably listens to this show.
Oh, that'd be awesome. But,
oh boy.
All right.
So, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, John. Hey, since you just spoke to me, I tortured Brad last episode with the donation game charity challenge, what have you. How do you feel about doing it this week?
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to give J-Man a good 60 seconds to explain the plot of Daddy's Home 2. And whatever time's left on the clock, we will donate that to a local charity of his choice. Are you ready, sir?
You got this, Jonathan.
Yeah.
It's all right. You.
I feel like I'm already setting myself up for failure.
I mean, Jonathan's the best at this game because he can always knock it out in like one, maximum three sentences.
I also feel like this may be a bit of a challenge because Daddy's Home 2 is both about nothing and also has a lot of things happening in it.
I believe in him. He can distill this down to its very essence.
I do also believe in him. So here we go. Ready?
Much like Nugget Nectar available at your local grocery. Please send me something, please. All right. Go ahead.
All right, we're dragging this out. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, hit it.
All right, Brad and Dusty kind of smooth things over in the last movie. They're being co-dads pretty well. Christmas time's coming up. They decide to have a family together Christmas, invite both their dads, which ruins everything because one of their dads is Mel Gibson, their other dad is John Lithgow, playing themselves. Hijinks ensue, a bunch of comedy bullshit. Some of it's funny, kind of. A lot of it's not. Then everyone gets together again, and I'm not joking, by singing fucking Do They Know It's Christmas, and it makes John Cena cry. The end.
I like how you haven't mentioned John Cena until the last part. And it does make John Cena cry.
Well, that was a cool 27 seconds. So $33 is going to go to a charity of J-Man's choosing.
I'm getting rusty.
Say what now?
I'm getting rusty. 27 seconds, geez.
You know, like I said, a lot of nothing happens in this movie.
Dad, Mom's Christmas.
Oh, man. You know, we've talked so much about wanting to do a Bad Mom's Christmas on this show, and it's kind of sad that we wound up having to do Daddy's Home 2 first.
I will take credit for us dragging our feet on that, because I've, for the longest time, both really wanted to and completely dreaded having my mother on this podcast so we could do a Brad's Mom's Christmas.
That sounds fun.
It's such a good gimmick, but I get why you don't want to do it.
Like, oh, you know, I'm all about the gimmicks, and it would be such a good gimmick. But on the other hand, I don't really want to watch a raunchy comedy with my mother.
You would literally die of shame.
I might turn into like a tiny little bean and just like curl up until I'm a tiny bean on a couch, because I don't want to
turn into a corn cob.
I'm gonna turn into, I'm not owned.
Brad corn cob.
Triple, I'm not owned. We should probably just watch it at some point. In fact, maybe in the interest of gender equality, perhaps it should be our next movie. I don't know.
That could be a fun way to kick off April. Who's to say? Yes. But right now we're talking about Daddy's Home 2.
Yes, we are talking about the Dad's Homes 2.
The Dad's Homes 2, which came out 2017, which was like a really weird sort of, I don't want to say inflection point because that sounds like fancy pants, but you know, the first one was like very solidly like the Obama years kind of movie, and this one is so Trump's not America kind of movie, and in like, kind of the worst way.
Post-Obama, pre-pandemic weirdness. Like, one because of the plot points is Mel Gibson books them a house on Airbnb, and it's, like, a thing.
Yeah. Well, and two, I mean, we could talk about the whole, the Mel Gibson of it all too, which, I mean, again, another person who is within spitting distance of the Triple Threat Club. If we really want, he's not allowed in. We're not going to watch Fat Man. But, you know, people have said to us before, like, you know, can't you forgive and forget? But when it's someone like Mel Gibson and who's said and done the things that he's said and done, I don't know about that. But wait, he's in this movie and he's leaning into that character. Wait, so we might as well give him the benefit of the doubt. What?
Mel Gibson is the anti-Semitic Passion of the Christ guy, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I like this movie.
And Tim Allen are on the naughty list. They're not allowed in the Triple Threat Club.
Fair enough. That's true. Tim Allen should be in the Triple Threat Club, but he's not because he's on the naughty list.
I mean, do the Santa Clauses all count as individual entries?
I mean, we watched three individual films called The Santa Claus that had Tim Allen in them, so I would think that would count. But
the rules
again,
we set up is that multiple entries in a series don't count.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that meeting. Anyways.
Oh, well. Anyway, but yeah, so Mel Gibson is here doing, not only doing kind of the Mel Gibson character, but he's also basically standing in for, like, your typical Republican dad.
Right.
Right? With all the catchphrases and buzzwords that those guys kind of throw around. But also John Lithgow is here as the typical, I guess, what do you call him? Because I don't want to just say Democrat dad, because that's not
what a Republican thinks a Democrat is like.
There, yes, there you go.
There it is. That's kind of what this movie is too. It's like I kind of described it as a children's book about how Republicans act like this, but Democrats act like that.
Yes, that's really yes. That, like that distilled this movie down to its essence.
There's really no joke there. That's what this is.
It is, and it's the worst part of this movie. And I don't know.
But so yeah, like
I don't know, man.
The movie opens with them all going to one of the kids' like Christmas pageants, and one of their daughters. See, here's the thing. I don't understand whose kid is who. It's just they have like four or five kids amongst them.
All right. So Mark Wahlberg and Linda Cardellini, their kids are Megan and the boy whose name I don't remember.
They're the two normie kids.
I think it's Megan and Dylan.
Dylan, yeah.
Dylan. The baby Griff, that's Linda Cardellini, Will Ferrell's kid, and the older girl, Adriana, that is... Is that Alessandro Brosio?
It's Mark Wahlberg's kid with... It's his stepdaughter with his new wife.
Yes, right? John Cena's the dad.
Right. Which, yeah, that's how the first movie ended. It was like, oh, the other dad is John Cena. So we can talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah,
like,
Alessandro Ambrosio is her name. Yeah, okay.
Right, yeah. But one of the kids, the kids all go up and they talk about, you know, what Christmas means to them. And their daughter goes up and she talks about how she loves the presents, but she hates having two Christmases because now both of her dads make things weird, which is so sad.
Yeah, I don't get it either, because it seems like both her fathers like love and support her.
Yeah, but I guess if you look at it from the kid's perspective, like, ugh, they're always around and they're always trying to be nice to me. Just leave me alone. I don't know about that. But so their answer to this is, let's all have a together Christmas and invite all the grandparents to the house and have big Christmas together. So Mel Gibson shows up, his Dusty's dad, and immediately complicates things by saying, I will rent a cabin in the woods for everybody so we can all spend it under one house.
As an intentional stirring the pot move.
Right, because he's just here to cause trouble. And Brad's dad, John Lithgow.
My dad.
Your dad. How similar to your dad is Brad's dad?
Not at all. I would say he's more similar to them. As close as you can get between the two, I feel like my dad's pretty normal, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. But
I mean, I was going to say, between a NASA astronaut and an improv comedian, where does your dad fall on that spectrum?
Well, Brad's dad's a retired mailman.
Yeah, he's a retired mailman the movie.
See, I forgot that until just now, but you're right.
It's
the thing I remembered is bad improv.
Yes. He's kind of, if you split the difference, I don't know. It's almost as if these characters are terrible caricatures of people that would never, hopefully never exist in real life.
I mean, the moment the movie comes out and says, yeah, here's Mel Gibson, he's an astronaut, I'm just like, fuck off. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole sort of game here is that Mel Gibson's coming in to sort of stir up trouble with his son, and
I feel like I know he's there to stir up trouble and stuff like that, but it comes down to he kind of missed Dusty too at the end.
Yeah, I mean,
he was coming to see his grandkids and stuff like that for
they
Christmas.
Pull their punches a little bit, where it's like the whole thing is he hasn't been around for 5 years and he misses being part of the family, but he's not around but every 5 years, and he feels conflicted about that. But the reason he invites people to the cabin is because he thinks his son is emasculated by having a co-parenting situation, which is a psychotic take to have in the 2000s.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Where was I? So they all get up to the John Lithgow's there as Brad's dad, and they all go to the cabin, and then man, hijinks ensue. Right? Am I right?
Yes.
They have 6 days to burn until Christmas, and so they do rich white people stuff for 6 days, and.
Yeah, they do coke, they kill Laura Palmer, all kinds of shit.
Like bowling and tubing and all sorts of family fun activities. No, it's fine.
It's all the stuff that they do in Christmas Vacation, almost to a T.
Yeah.
And you know?
There's all sorts of setups for Will Ferrell to do physical comedy, because that's what he's going to do in this movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, this movie feels like Christmas Vacation, except instead of Clark Griswold against himself, like internally, like he's his own worst enemy, there is just another Clark Griswold there fighting with him.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that can stop a bad Clark Griswold with a gun is a good Clark Griswold with a gun, right?
The child with a gun. I like the child with a gun. The child was probably my favorite character.
Megan?
Yes.
If anybody was going to get shot in this movie, I'm glad it was Mel Gibson. I feel bad saying that, but it's true.
So, yeah, normally, look, we made a child do a swear is just lame, but like, this child was good at swearing. I'm going to say that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
She's pretty good swearing and drinking and asking to go to IHOP. So
that was hilarious.
Speaking of children drinking, we have a number of like B, C, D, E, and F plots going on.
Oh, yeah. Lots of little runners.
Let's see. I think the one most germane to, oh my god, they're all sort of germane to the plot, but not really. Let me just go in order of what I can remember. B plot is the kid, Duncan, whatever his name is.
Dylan.
Yeah, I got the first letter right. He starts making eyes at a girl, and he wants to solicit advice from his co-dads about how to deal with women, basically. And that goes, and he wants Brad's advice, and that goes about how you would expect, because Brad is the sensitive one and advises him to be in the friend zone. Whereas Dusty and his father take umbrage to that, and that causes a bit of a blow up in the whole A plot with the whole Brad versus Dusty stuff.
But also, like, his sisters are just savage to him when they even notice him looking at another girl.
It's very on brand. Kids are brutal.
Oh, yeah.
C plot. The two girls want to steal eggnog and drink because they want to drink. Great. Good job. Sure. And also, okay, D plot. My god, there's so many like little plots that are okay.
I think a big one was the Brad's dad, and like he couldn't figure out about Brad's dad's divorce.
Yeah, Brad's dad has already become divorced, and is dealing with that.
So yeah, he makes like a weird excuse about like, oh, this is why your mom didn't come, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And like Mark Wahlberg sees right through it. But Will Ferrell just does not at all.
Yeah. E plot. Good lord, I can't believe I'm saying this. Oh god, I was gonna say it, but no. Brad's
thermostats.
The thermostat is probably my favorite thing in this entire movie. Like, as soon as Mel Gibson goes and wakes up John Lithgow, and then they start agreeing, I see exactly what's going on here, and I'm like, oh yes. Oh yes. It's the dad classic... the classic dad thermostat joke, but I can so relate now.
I'll bet. I related, but for a weirdly different reason.
Oh yeah?
It's because this cabin had one of those fancy Google like Nest thermostats.
Yeah.
Which I used to have until we replaced our entire HVAC system and they insisted we replace it. And now I don't have that anymore.
Wait, the HVAC maker insisted you replace it?
Yeah, they were like, this thing only works with this one specific kind of thermostat. So,
so long as you got the right wires, dog, you're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, I might switch it back out here at some point. But I also don't want to blow the house up, so I don't know.
Okay.
Nikki's shaking her head no at me like, don't do this.
All right, all
there's
right.
Like a, there's houses next door and everything. You can get another one.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. There's also the plot where Brad's wife, I forget her name, is trying to gain approval of Dusty's wife, who's like a novelist, right?
Yeah, like she's both trying to get her approval, but also being she's
judgy as hell.
Yeah, because she thinks that her daughter is she thinks that Dusty's new wife's daughter is a bad influence on her daughter.
And that kind of
she's, but like,
yeah,
that links into the whole drinking plot, I guess.
Right.
Oh my goodness! Plots upon plots upon plots. Round and round we go.
It's hard to call some of these plots though, because they're basically just like there's a scene and then a follow up scene later, and that's about it for a lot of these.
I guess, but they all kind of feed off of one another in a weird Markov chain of movie. Stuff,
yeah, but
you
I mean,
take
like
that they... phrase to the bank, by the way.
Mark off chain of movie stuff, we'll put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, you're right. This is basically babble,
but like, yeah, we mentioned how this is basically Christmas Vacation, but I mean, there's the scene where they go trekking into the woods and they go to cut down a Christmas tree, and thankfully, they learned the lesson from Clark Griswold, they brought their own chainsaw. Which like that whole scene ends with like my two favorite jokes in the entire movie,
okay.
Which is, you know, Brad accidentally cuts down a cell phone tower, which is not particularly funny, but what is funny is that they wind up just using that as the Christmas tree.
Their $20,000 Christmas tree.
$20,000 Christmas tree, like cell phone tower and all. That's funny. Then follow-up joke, oh no, they left Brad's dad out in the woods and he's getting eaten by wolves.
Yes, that's probably that was one of my laughs that I listed down, is I liked the scene with John Lithgow just kind of being pawed at by wolves out in the middle of the woods at night.
Yeah, the wolves are just there like, you smell weird, let me fix that.
Yeah. Like one rolls on top of him. It's good. It's good. I feel bad for John Lithgow being in this mean-spirited movie. This mean bad movie.
He's definitely game for it. Like, he knows what kind of movie he's in. He's just here to have fun.
I don't know about you, but like my first thought whenever I think of John Lithgow was like, what do I know him from? Cliffhanger. He's the villain in Cliffhanger. I don't know why that's my first thought, but that's what it is.
I mean, it's Dick from Third Rock from the Sun. That's what I always go to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's my problem. I think of Cliffhanger. So I'm just like, yeah, John Lithgow will just chew up a bad script for money. He likes it.
Yeah.
the two things I know him most from, he's basically a space alien, is Third Rock from the Sun, Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, so he gets pawed out by wolves. There's really not a, like, there's plot happening, but there's not plot happening. It's like you said,
you get
a movie about nothing. It's basically a blended family killing time for 6 days. The movie.
Which, you know, which I'm sure is like super relatable to like a lot of families out there.
Yes.
So like they definitely are making this movie for somebody. And I'm not just like dumping on it for no reason.
Right.
Yeah. I want to say one of my laughs was the snowblower eating the Christmas lights, mainly just because of how long it went on for.
It was a very long scene.
That started out okay and got funny just by not ending.
Look, they have a certain amount of budget to spend with the CGI guys. They're gonna use it.
But can I also just point out how like galaxy brain insane it is to rent an Airbnb cabin and then spend your own money to decorate it for Christmas?
Right.
Yes.
That is like, I can't fathom that. Like how insanely rich are these people?
Fair.
Yeah. This movie vaguely understands what Airbnb is. Cause like you have pretty up Christmas trees. They spill cocoa all over the place. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They are not getting that deposit back. I don't even know if they had deposits. I've never done an Airbnb. I'm just assuming.
I don't think the writer of this movie's done Airbnb either.
Yeah. Mm. Usually you go to an Airbnb and you're going to make dinner, right? And yeah. You go into the kitchen and there will be like half a bottle of vegetable oil, pepper, and a fish spatula. And that's what you, and then that's all they've provided for you to make dinner with. I Airbnb kitchens are so like, I've had one good Airbnb kitchen in my entire time doing Airbnb.
I've always just assumed that those were just somebody's house and like they would, of course they're fully furnished.
It's,
but I guess not.
I think the ratio to like houses to some asshole has just figured out that Airbnb is a license to print free money by just buying an apartment and overcharging exorbitant rates for it.
Yes, and it's become more and more that. It was a good deal back in, 2014,
mm-hmm.
when it was actually, like, mostly houses and people's apartments, like, legitimate apartments that they lived in. But since then, yes, it has become, like, management companies and, you know, random landlords deciding that they're going to take some of their units off the market and just rent them out as Airbnbs because it's less trouble to them.
Joe Schmo saying, yeah, I can be a property manager and just renting out his own apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a lot going on too.
I haven't had a good Airbnb in 4 years, probably. I don't know.
Also realize this is an extremely dead conversation we're having right now.
I'm sorry. We can get back on track.
Let me tell you about my favorite Airbnb. No.
I've got top three, but I'm going to save it.
See, Brad's legitimately come to play tonight.
Sorry.
All right. I can get us back on track here.
Yeah,
okay. So the reason Airbnb is ruined is the same way that everything else is ruined, is just because someone's decided, oh, I can make a quick fucking buck off of this with no labor whatsoever.
Yes.
Which not that I'm adverse to that, but it's always like by exploiting others.
Yeah.
It's just like with fucking AI, fucking Uber, fucking everything else. El problema es el capitalismo, if you want to believe it.
There you go.
This is kind of like how the first time Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg made a movie together, the end credits were like a huge screed against capitalism.
Which movie is this?
Did y'all ever see The Other Guys?
No.
Is that the cop movie?
Yeah, that's the cop movie. Where it's just their riff on a buddy cop movie, which is, it's fun and silly and everything, but the end credits are just this weird like PowerPoint presentation about the evils of like corporatization and capitalism and stuff. It goes unnecessarily hard for a comedy.
Is that the one where The Rock jumps off a building?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that one. Okay, yeah.
Where The Rock and Sam Jackson are the actual buddy cops and they die spectacularly? Yes. Oh boy. All
right. Should we get this train back on the rails?
Yeah. I like one of my favorite gags in the movie is when Will Ferrell is like kind of down and out and he's depressed because of his dad, and he winds up having a heart-to-heart conversation with the girl that his stepson is making goo-goo eyes at. Because, like, that's just, I don't know. I like the turnaround there. Like, that's not the character you would expect him to have a heart-to-heart
he
with.
He basically says that her parents got divorced because of her. I don't think that's a very good heart-to-heart.
He was just saying that it's possible that she's the reason.
He may have scarred that child for life.
He's having an honest emotional moment, and she just happens
he's
to be...
He's having a breakdown! What do you mean?
Standing there.
He's being honest and emotional with himself, and she just happens to be in the crosshairs when he has this moment.
A grown man is crying, saying your parents got divorced because of you when you were a baby. I don't think it's as beautiful as you think it is.
Were you a difficult baby?
Joseph, no, probably.
No. No. But see, I'm also saying is that's why that scene is funny.
Okay.
Because, yeah. I mean, I don't want to explain comedy. But speaking of bad comedy, man, that bad improv scene where he finally discovers that his dad is divorced is just
it's like
Scott's Tots level, like, cringe. I don't know how to deal with it.
It's, yeah.
But then maybe I'm biased because I have kind of a chip on my shoulder about improv comedy.
Yes, and?
What kind of chip?
Touché to the both of you.
I'm curious.
I just don't like it. Oh. I've spent enough time around improv comedians to know that that's just...
I think it's
like swimming with sharks.
I think that's a problem more with improv comedians than the medium of improv comedy itself.
It's
those
a
vicious improv.
It's a personal problem. I will freely admit that. What else can we talk about with Daddy's Home 2 here? It's, oh, you know
the live manger.
Well, the live manger scene is wonderful because. I mean, you don't see many live manger scenes anymore, do you?
I just want to say, probably one of my favorite jokes is a really, 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 really dumb joke, but it tickles the Bradford centers of my brain.
Okay.
Where, in the scene before, they talk about that special thing that we planned for tonight, and then the text on the movie screen just reads, when they switch to the next scene, that special thing that we planned for tonight.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Always it's an easy laugh for Mr. Bradford, that sort of thing. Anyhow.
Oh boy. But this is also after they've brought John Cena into the movie. So he's getting in on the live nativity too. And just seeing John Cena in like the innkeeper's outfit with the fake beard and everything, that's just good comedy.
I think you could probably dress John Cena up in any sort of silly costume and it would be good comedy.
I mean, did y'all watch the Oscars? You can dress him up in literally nothing and it's still good comedy.
I did not watch the Oscars. Was John Cena nude at the Oscars?
He presented the costuming Oscar naked, yes.
Wait.
As a bit.
Fully, fully naked? Like, really naked? Do you have a little pig leaf down there?
No, he was like hiding his junk with the envelope on TV, on live TV.
They say he wore like a wiener hat, but I don't really know what that is.
He wore a wiener hat?
Yeah. What people wear in the movies.
What's a wiener hat? Like a hot dog?
Condom.
Like a hot dog? Yes, thank you. Like a hot dog hat?
I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh, the joys of having mixed company on a podcast.
The BuzzFeed term was wiener hat.
Oh, I see. He was wearing
to cover his junk.
A modesty cover so that if there was an accident, he would not have revealed his genitalia to
flesh-toned undies, I believe they're called.
Okay.
That's
now
not
I
as
get
fun.
A full picture. That's fun. Good for John Cena.
Good for, and I really do think it was like Jimmy Kimmel probably paid him personally to do that. But regardless, just the mere fact that John Cena like came to be a goofball in this movie, I appreciate 100%. Like, I'm not a John Cena fan per se, but just he really does just roll with it, doesn't he? Especially at the very end.
Damn, it's my favorite song of all time.
I'll play it in August. I don't give a fuck.
That's what made me laugh the hardest.
So, yeah, let's just go straight to the ending, because this is like a big set piece is them all going to the movies, because like
the avalanche
has like cut off access to the main highway. So they're like, well, where can we go? What's open on Christmas Day? The movies.
Well, remember the time that,
we should probably say that they all got into a fight at like the manger, and Mel Gibson's like antics worked, and they're all mad at each other.
Yes.
Right.
So before the movies, there is like turmoil. They keep using the harbor term, like.
Oh yeah, the safe harbor is now wide open.
Yeah, the harbor is stormy.
I don't know. It's Fleet Week. Speaking of the movies on Christmas Day, remember when we went to see Django Unchained on Christmas Day?
I do remember that, yes.
That was a special treat. That's the only movie I've ever seen on Christmas Day, actually.
Yeah, that was the only time I've ever done that. That was like late in the afternoon.
It was nice. We should do it more often.
It was kind of nice. I get it. I don't know.
You're sick. You just want to get out of the house by then.
This is true.
Anyhow.
Oh, boy. But yeah, they go to the movies, and this scene just feels to me like an advertisement from the movies to people watching the movies, like, hey, come see a movie.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, literally. But I would love to talk about the marquee at this movie theater, because there's some choice movies going on Christmas Day.
Please do.
Including, so these are all fake movies, unfortunately. And I would love to hear what everyone's favorite is between By All Memes, M-E-M-E-S, Deluxe Kill, Eyes Peeled, Falcon and Hawk, Mistletoe, M-I-S-S-I-L-E-T-O-W.
Which they actually talk about in the movie.
That's the movie they go see, yeah. Lobster Tales and The Wise Men's Wives. I would kind of love to know which of these movies would you want to go see?
Oh, God.
Well, they already made By All Memes. It's called the Emoji Movie, so I don't want to see that.
True. Nikki, what do you think?
Falcon and Hawk. Because in my mind, it's like a buddy movie. Between birds.
I'm picturing Anthony Mackie.
That's what I was thinking, too.
And Ethan Hawke.
Something like a superhero buddy bird movie.
I was trying to remember who played Hawkman, but I don't think anybody saw that movie.
No.
My personal favorite is Deluxe Kill, but only because it sounds like the kind of movie they would go see in Seinfeld. Like, a lot of these sound like Seinfeld movies to me.
Like Rochelle.
Like Prognosis Negative.
Prognosis Negative, right.
Sack Lunch.
That was a movie?
Yeah. Cry Again.
Yeah, Lobster Tale definitely sounds like that, and that would be my choice. Is it a sequel to The Lobster? That's what I want to know.
Or is it a sequel to Shark Tale?
Oh, God.
Is it an animated movie?
I don't know which lobsters? One I would prefer less, honestly.
Whoever wins, we lose.
I saw Lobster in theaters, and it was a movie. It was fine. I don't know.
I forget. Was who made that one?
I don't know who made it. It was the one where like they go to the center where they can't find their true loves. They get turned into an animal, and main character wants to become a lobster. It was usually like early 2010s indie. You've seen this movie. You've seen 10 of these movies. You know.
Oh yeah, I think that guy went on to do Poor Things this year.
I've heard good things about Poor Things though.
I was not impressed.
You weren't a fan?
I think negatively of it.
I did hear this from like a 75-year-old man, though, so I guess I should take that with a grain of salt.
Well, like, I get why people love it. Not for me.
Okay.
You know?
Gotcha.
I don't think I'm smart enough to understand it.
Me neither. And I feel bad about that. But let's talk about talk about Mistletoe.
It's the movie they go see. And yeah. I love that this is the second time that baby Griffey is exposed to horrible violence.
Yeah, that's true.
He
loves it. But real quick. Yes. I'm sorry, we missed Jonathan. Jonathan, which of these movies is your favorite?
You're not going to get out of this.
I want to say Falcon and Hawks would be the one I'd want to see, because it sounds like an absolutely terrible, like, buddy comedy. Like, nice. Like when they, like, on the Critic, when they had, like, Smith and Wesson.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it sounds like they came up, like, it really, that sounds like a buddy cop movie where they came up with a title first in the script, like, maybe fourth or fifth.
Probably so, yeah. Like, I really think, like, Falcon and Hawk is like, okay, they were clearly thinking of two specific people when they came up with this joke. And I think it's Anthony Mackie and Ethan Hawke.
I don't know. Now Jonathan says with the buddy cop thing, I'm thinking like a Western.
Like Falcon and Hawk?
Yeah, like an old one. You got like a desperado and a sheriff. And they got to work together.
They got to work together and do something really, really racist.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not supposed to be like a samurai film thing, like Hawk and Chick parodies and Bob's Burgers?
To me, it's Hobbs and Shaw the comparison.
Probably Hobbs and Shaw.
I don't think Hobbs and Shaw was even out at this point. But I mean, you're probably right. It's that kind of movie. You know, it's the big dumb action comedy.
Yeah, like Tango and Cash. Let's go with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's... oh, God. My brain just shut off for a second. I'm sorry. No, but Mistletoe is a movie starring Liam Neeson as, I guess, a tow truck driver who has to stop terrorists from stealing and detonating nuclear weapons. And also, he loves his kids. Which is my favorite detail. Just like throw their kids in there randomly just so that they can have like a nice family lesson. But the power goes out during the movie and they all have to go to the lobby and they're stuck in the theater. So Will Ferrell gives this big impassioned speech about how they're all stuck at the movies on Christmas Day. And that's wonderful because that's where we people should be, is together on Christmas.
At the movies.
At the movies. Come go to your local AMC theater today.
I'm just thinking of that thank you letter that Tom Cruise put at the beginning of the new Mission Impossible, thanking people for coming out to the movie theater to watch the new Mission Impossible.
Yeah, he's been doing that for a while. Like I think it's the fifth or the sixth Mission Impossible on DVD. And the first thing that I saw when I popped it in was Tom Cruise thanking me for buying the DVD. Shh. And also explaining which settings he preferred I put on it to watch it the right way.
Psycho shit. Anyhow.
Respect. But
it's fine.
What?
He's like, please turn on motion blur and lens flare.
Please turn on 60 FPS smoothing. So that you have an aneurysm, and Brad hates it when he looks at it. All right, yeah. Thanks. Back to the movie.
So Will Ferrell there's a live band in the middle of the theater, which I've never seen anywhere in my entire life.
Yeah, what if you're trying to watch your movie and just start hearing drums out in the lobby? That would suck.
It would make a lot more sense if it was like a band that got caught in the same snowstorm. But no, yeah. This is like the house band for the movie theater. They have a platform. It's wild.
It's crazy. And they're singing Christmas songs. They're having a good time. But then after the power goes out and they're all in the lobby, Will Ferrell starts singing Do They Know It's Christmas? And the house band starts to join in. And I guess we have to talk about Do They Know It's Christmas?
We do have to
that,
talk.
So I want to say you know that there's no way that the house that the movie theater house band's band name is not Show Tunes, right?
Oh,
thank
that's
you.
Amazing.
1,000,000% yes.
Show Tunes. Show
Tunes. The whole thing that leads to this conclusion, though, which we haven't mentioned, is that, well, obviously Brad and Dusty are fighting, but also John Cena's character is pissed off because it turns out that the person that Dylan has been eyeing this entire time is his stepsister, and he goes in for a big smoocheroo.
She's not even stuck in a dryer. What, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
God, why did you make that reference? Stop.
I don't
gonna,
get it.
You're gonna... Oh, God. Well, John and I have outed ourselves as sickos, so let's just move on.
Yes!
Yes! Anyhow, John Cena's, like, pissed and about to leave, and then we get into the whole, do they know it's Christmas? And now we can talk about this song.
Well, not even, because like they have specifically set this song up throughout the entire movie, because Dusty's backstory is
he was
in the Glee Club as a kid, and his dad was at the Glee Club performance of this song, and he was going to sing the Bono part of the song, but as he steps up to the mic to sing, his dad leaves the performance with some other kid's mom, and that ruined his experience of that song forever.
And the Bono part, for those not familiar, is the part where Bono, like, basically scream sings, thank God it's them instead of you, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Which is kind of a famously terrible line in that song. Because I guess let's talk
about this song, because
we have gone 10 years into this podcast and have never once really brought this song up. And
let's start now.
Yeah, I mean,
just leave it there. No.
Good night, everybody.
Maybe I should just start.
Go for it.
The only way I can imagine that this song is popular as a Christmas song is people that saw Live Aid and have nostalgia for it. Right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, this was a big
thing. Did they come
out
like close to the same time?
Yeah. This was a big thing in the 80s, like the supergroup charity singles. You know, there's a whole documentary on Netflix now about the We Are the World single and stuff like that. And it's all because of this song.
I feel bad for saying this, and I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. Do not care for it. Like, I get what they were going for when they made it. And I get that it was a good cause. I don't get why people want to listen to it at Christmas time every single year. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I guess it's trying to remind people to be more charitable.
This
song feels like when you visit like a website for a defunct group or charity. I don't know. It seems like a relic, is all I'm trying to say.
It's like when you see the Sarah McLachlan sad animal.
I was about to say the
TV.
Commercial with the
exactly,
and it makes you feel bad for like 30 seconds, and then it's back to your regularly scheduled bullshit.
Yes, and maybe maybe that's the point.
So here's the thing. So I had to like do a free trial of Paramount fucking Plus. now I have to know that Paramount Plus exists as well on Amazon for this. And so it used Amazon Video's player, which has the IMDb X-ray thing. And every time this song came up, it's specifically credited as the Glee version, the Glee TV show version.
Huh, weird.
Oh, I hate the internet so much. It was a mistake.
Well, speaking of Paramount Plus, I just have one quick question, since I know we're all using it right now. Is there a Christmas episode of the Halo TV series?
I don't know.
I would imagine not. But
we could probably maybe find a Christmas or a red versus blue. Call that close enough.
No, we're not doing that. But if any of our listeners has watched Halo and knows of a Christmas episode, let us know. We'll watch it before our trial expires. I don't have a problem with the song, really. Like, my mom loves it, so I'm like kind of nostalgic for it for those reasons. And I appreciate the sentiment behind it. I'm fine with it. It's just...
I only hear it at Christmas, and then I kind of just forget it exists for the rest of the year.
Well, that's most Christmas. I feel like that's most Christmas songs, right?
So, yeah. It doesn't bug me, like...
fair enough.
10 months out of the year.
I mean, like, I'm like John Cena. I'll yell about it in August. I don't fucking care.
Oh, okay.
You're gonna yell out your car window, thank God it's them instead of you. At a bunch of teens walking home from the McDonald's.
Man, thank God there's famine in Africa and not in my girlfriend's apartment.
See,
right?
That's why that line is weird, right?
Exactly.
Like, that.
Like, this is a charity single to raise money for, like, for starving people in Africa. And Bono comes in and says, thank God they're starving.
And not you. And, like, I get what the songwriters were going for, but it's just such a weird way to go about it, right?
And also, like, do they know it's Christmas? Like, I think all the non-Christians don't really fucking care if it's Christmas or not.
Right.
Well, even then, like, everyone has a calendar. Most people know when it's Christmas. But, yeah, do they care is the question. You're right. And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time, except, you know, the parts that do snow, like, you know, the top of Kilimanjaro and shit. But who cares about that? I'm just gonna let that one dangle there.
It's rough. Anyways, we've thoroughly trashed this beloved Christmas song. So modern Christmas song.
Can I trash one more thing and then we'll move on?
Yes.
The only thing I'm not okay. I don't hate this song, but I will say the only thing worse than this song is any time since then that they've tried to bring it back and remake it.
Like a cover? Yeah.
Yeah, or like updated versions with updated groups. Hate
that
shit.
Like the Glee version.
Like the Glee version. Don't
like the Limp Bizkit version.
There's a Limp Bizkit version.
There's a Limp Bizkit version? Is there really?
I don't know.
Oh. Oh, come on. I thought you were queuing it up for us.
Yeah. Wow.
This show is airing a little too close to April Fool's Day.
I mean, Fred Durst is a big enough asshole to cover Behind Blue Eyes. I wouldn't put anything past him.
This reminds me of when we were doing the like Christmas Vacation stuff for the OST party, and I found like a CD of the Christmas Vacation soundtrack and it's like the official one on Amazon's website. At the very bottom of like all the whole track list, the very bottom, it says also featuring Holiday Road by Limp Bizkit. And I had to do a double take, like, really? Does that exist? It's on Amazon. Amazon says it exists. I can't find it on YouTube anywhere. I hope it's a prank. I really, truly do.
Some person that had to enter in the metadata was bored at work one day.
Yeah, probably. Oh, man. So, yeah, the day is saved and everyone loves each other at the end. Mel Gibson does not want to say he loves his kid, and that's fine. We'll get there.
No, it's not Limp Bizkit. It's a band called Limp.
That's better? Question mark?
I've never heard of them.
Nor. Neither have I. Their cover art of this album looks a lot like... I'm going to say it looks a lot like the cover art for You Can't Stop the Bum Rush by Lem.
Okay.
But yeah, it's from an album called Poppin' Disorderly, apparently.
Fair enough.
So yeah, it's some random... Like, it's some random, like, junior varsity punk band, as far as I can tell.
Oh, so basically, like, the auto-generate just kind of, like, auto-filled Limp Bizkit at the end of that sentence.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Okay. So we're kind of rounding the corner here. Let's go straight to the crankometer and rate this movie, because I think we're all getting a little bit tired of this. So the crankometer, friends, is our patented XY-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is Christmosity, how Christmassy the film is, and the Y-axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is. So, friends, the X-axis, how Christmassy is Daddy's Home 2?
I feel that this is a very Christmassy movie, because what is more Christmassy than, like, killing time with your family around Christmas? Because you all get together, and then you kind of don't know what to do with yourselves for, like, 3 days, even though you planned this out for 3 days, right?
That's fair.
That feels very Christmassy to me.
See, this is not something that I deal with a lot because my family all lives in town, so we don't have this problem.
Right.
We can all go home after.
We can all just go home. We see each other for like 2 hours at Christmas, and then we're like, yeah, that's good enough.
Nice.
Because we'll see each other like a week from now. It's okay.
No.
But I get it. I get, like, this is a super relatable. Like lots of families go through this. This is, you know, I'm cool with that. Lots of Christmas decorating, lots of Christmas songs. I'm good with, like, I want to say a 4, maybe.
I would agree with that.
Nikki's shaking her head, too. She's like, yeah.
4.
Oh,
solid 4.
Okay.
John? No, she was, like, raising her hand, like, 4. Number 4.
Oh. Any
J-Man, what about you?
Rite of Refusal, J-Man?
No, this is a pretty Christmas movie. It gets the point across that the important part of Christmas is family and just being with people you want to be around, blah 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 fucking blah.
Holy licensed soundtrack, Batman. There's a lot. Yeah,
we heard, what, 3 seconds of Christmas in Hollis?
Right.
Maybe 7 seconds of Thunderstruck.
They just do them all. They've got this budget. They're going to spend it, damn it.
They do it just enough of the Kinks' Father Christmas until what's his name reveals the truth about Santa Claus.
Basically the intro.
Yeah, that great, like, da-da-da, while he's destroying the fucking house. What else we got? I think that's it.
There's one in the tubing scene, but I can't remember what it is.
Oh, it's the Christmas wrapping.
Isn't Yeah.
No, that's in there too. That's a good one. Yeah, it's a pretty good soundtrack. You also hear the full "Do They Know It's Christmas" by everybody over the end credits. That's fun. Including John Cena and Mark Wahlberg. So how about the Christmas? No, we did that one. How about the Y-axis? How good is Daddy's Home 2? What did we think, friends?
What's our scale for this one?
It goes all the way from -5 to +5.
Oh, okay.
I want to let someone else take the lead on this.
I'm living in the Price is Right now because Nikki's holding up a number 2 sign.
I don't want to go high or low.
Oh, I would go lower than that. Like a 1 or a 0, I think.
Really?
You think a 2 is too high?
I think, like, a 2 is, I don't know. It's like there's so much like mean-spirited and not like poorly aged stuff in this movie. I don't know. But like,
I'd be okay with a 1.
I did get a chuckle out of it. Like, there's some funny bits. I don't know.
But
what about you and John?
I agree with Brad, because like a lot of the humor in this movie is like, ugh, snowflakes, am I right?
Yeah.
And that gets to be a bit much.
Yeah, there's a joke where the punchline of the joke is that a kid is gay.
Is also true.
Which one was that? Did I miss that?
At the end when all the girls are lining up to kiss what's his name? And that one boy just like leans over and like grins.
Yeah.
It's a bad look. A little too mean-spirited for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of joke that's just made for like an uncle to go like, ha, he's gay.
Right. Oh, gosh. Exactly. Yeah.
It's the kind of joke that like Mel Gibson's character would love.
I want to say I think this movie's like mean-spiritedness in the comedy is, this is just what comedy is.
This is just what popular mainstream comedy is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel you there.
Yeah.
This is a Will Ferrell comedy straight down the middle.
I'm honestly gonna give the movie a little bit of credit for after the reveal of that boy, it didn't cut back to the other boy like making a barf face, basically.
Right.
I wouldn't put it past most fucking terrible comedies to do something like that.
That's fair. I mean, we have come at least a little bit farther than that.
Then we regress, though. Don't worry about it.
I mean, a 1 or a 2 is fine with me. I didn't dislike it. I had my fun with it, but it's not one of my favorites.
I'm okay going lower.
I think that's fair. I enjoyed it. I keep forgetting to get us to write down what our predictions are beforehand. I would have put this in the negatives easy as my prediction.
Yeah, my expectations were low for this one.
And maybe that's why I'm rating it so highly. And that's why I feel like I'm pulling my punches a little bit. You know?
Well, we're all getting soft in our old age. And
I
want to
give it a one because I didn't actively hate it. It did have a few jokes that I liked.
Okay.
That's fair.
That feels good to me.
I'm in the same boat.
It does have a pack of wolves pawing at John Lithgow, and I think maybe that's worth a point by itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
Good times. Great oldies, friends. So yeah, I think a positive 4, positive 1 is where we're going to land on this one, which is honestly kind of surprising to me. I kind of thought this would be one of our first negative of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of figured this would be lower on both accounts, but eh.
Yeah.
You know, it's stranger things have happened. So yeah, stay tuned, friends, because we may be dipping back into the parental comedy well soon enough with Bad Moms Christmas. Stay tuned for that. But friends, I think this concludes this episode of Christmas Creeps. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate the listener who sent us this request. I mean, I had fun doing this one.
Send us more requests.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. If you want to send us any more requests, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, all the socials. We're at Christmas Creeps. You can't miss us. If you want to email us anything, it's at xmascreeps@gmail.com. And please join our Discord channel, because that's where most of our fun shenanigans take place day to day. We have a lot of fun on Discord. So yeah, come check that out. That's in our show notes. Am I leaving anything out?
Let's see. We talked about the movie. I think it was everything.
That's it. We talked about the movie. We drank some beers and we had a good time. That's all in a day's work for Christmas Creeps. So friends, thank you for listening to Christmas Creeps. We wish you the best as I was going to say as March Madness kicks off, but we're not doing that. We wish you the best as we send you into April, and have a wonderful evening. Good night.
Good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.